So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Conor McGregor. Bom, Conor McGregor recebendo todo o carinho da torcida brasileira.
Olá, senhoritas!
Conor, what is your expectation for tomorrow night?
It doesn't matter what way the contest is going to be, because there's only one champion here, and they know that. The UFC know that. That's why they flown me over here. I'm going to take your hometown boy's belt. When I swing that left hook, the human skull cannot take it. Your boy will fall if we face. I'm still alive. I'm still alive. Talk is cheap.
Conor, look here. First. Don't talk, fight. In a second, I'll just smash you. Look your face. Yeah, man! Yeah!
Look at his head when I raise it!
Look at
his
face!
I'll raise his head!
He's on
the island. He's the jungle.
I'll just smash you. Only this I talk for you.
Come down here and kiss my feet!
Don't think shit, stink, pink gators. My Detroit players, Tim's for my hooligans in Brooklyn. Dead right, if the head right, Biggie there, and I. Papa been school since days of under rules. Never lose, never choose to. Bruce Cruz who? Do something to us. Talk go through us. Girls want to us, wanna do us. Screw us, who us? Yeah, Papa and Pop. Close like stars.
Oh, it's not that MMA shit.
Welcome to Review Away, I am John Pollock. And with me is Wei Ting.
It is me.
It is you. Boy, you arrive in Las Vegas Tuesday night and you forgot to do the podcast.
God,
welcome back.
Thanks. I have a flight later on in an hour, so let's just do this quick and boom.
We'll make this very quick. Was this essential preparation for you, going and watching this six-part series on Conor McGregor, as you're going to be around this individual the next couple of days going into Saturday?
Absolutely it was. Totally. I feel like I've kind of largely stayed away from, you know, this guy's, too many of his interviews. I haven't really watched a ton of all that stuff. I mean, outside of what I watch on a daily basis here, I haven't really investigated into any of the Countdown specials yet. I started watching the Embedded series and, of course, this, and I feel like now I've got a pretty good grasp of all the hype.
You know, it's interesting to watch this. Any fighter, yeah, you could throw this over to pro wrestling too. I think pro wrestlers as a general rule have a better handle on it. But MMA fighters that go from obscurity to this insane level where they're doing millions of interviews, and you can certainly see it with Conor, and he'll voice it at times, just how monotonous some of these interviews are, and being fried by being, he says this in one of the episodes, the art of doing this is being able to answer the same question 100 different ways.
Yeah, but not to do it in a way that makes it seem like you're completely sick of doing it. And
yeah.
He does a very good job of that.
And that's interesting to go from where, you know, he was, you know, this obscure, I won't say obscure, but I mean somebody that had his fan base in Ireland coming up through Cage Warriors, and this guy was then signed and put onto a UFC undercard in Sweden for his debut against Marcus Brimage, where I think it was, you know, a coin flip if this guy would even beat Marcus Brimage. Mm-hmm. And he did this fantastic interview going into that fight on Ariel Helwani's show where, my God, if you heard that interview, those 20 minutes, you knew this guy had an incredible personality and the ability to be this breakthrough star. But, I mean, the jury was out. How is this guy going to perform in the UFC? Where was he going to, ascend in terms of whether you have a personality or not? And then suddenly his second fight was in Boston against Max Holloway, and I was there for that fight. And it was incredible, the fanfare this guy had received after just one undercard fight in the UFC. And he was already, by the end of that card in Boston, you knew this guy had something special. And it was just a question of how high this guy could go. And now we are the week here of his interim title fight.
I think the fact that he can speak so well will make you feel like he probably won't be as good technically. Like, well, it'll make you think that his skill is probably not as good, because think of how rare it is in pro wrestling to have somebody who can, you know, talk really well. That's not really that easy to find. It's way rarer in MMA to have somebody who's even aware of, you know, their character and their personality, and to have somebody who can do that and fight good, that's a lot to ask for of anybody. And the fact that, you know, every time this guy goes out there and fights, there's a lot on the line, because, you know, he can talk so well, but can he back it up with his skill? And every time he fights, he has to kind of put that on the line.
Do you hear that? All the wrestling fans are gone now.
Great.
Do you want to know what they have penciled in as the main event for WrestleMania next year?
Not really.
Okay.
Not right now.
Well, let's get back to our MMA discussion then.
Okay.
I know this is going to be a show that's...
I don't know. Whatever. Who
yeah.
Cares?
I don't care at all. Yeah. The people that go out of their way to tell me that, I don't know if I've shared this with you, but I have taken a large step away from Twitter over the past 10 days,
mm-hmm.
where I think I have gone on Twitter... other than posting things, I just don't click on my app mentions any longer.
Okay, cool.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I encourage everybody to do this.
No, I mean, I
won't say I haven't clicked on them, period.
People don't get hatred or you know, negative.
I do, though. So it's kind of a nice balance. I won't say I haven't checked at all in 10 days, but you were right. You were way ahead of the curve. Of saying that I just waste too much time on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I've realized that too. I've been so much more productive by just kind of not going to this particular outlet.
Yeah, I've actually gotten back onto it.
Flipped roles.
Yeah, we have.
Well, you should run the law account then, because that's really my only reason I've been going back, is to post stuff and...
No.
Make sure the stream is fine on Sunday nights when we have the live show.
I think you're way better at that. But I think it's all about moderation, and, you know, more importantly, how it affects you.
I feel more at ease now.
Great.
Sometimes the wrong comment could just, I get so mad. But yeah. Now, I went on there on Sunday, and it was like, I'm laughing. I'm like, huh, you fools.
Why don't you check it right now? I'm curious to see what you're missing out on.
No, I don't want to.
Open it. Let's see. Come on. What's some of the negativity that people would write? Because I can guarantee you it's not, probably not that big of a deal.
Oh, it probably is. It probably is. Hey, how ugly does this guy still look? Oh, here we go.
Yeah, let's see one.
Okay, let's pull up here. Oh, this guy, who's always just a fountain of negativity.
Yeah, what's his name?
I've been skipping the reviews for weeks due to what shows are Bing covered. Chill Mascaris.
Okay.
So that's unfortunate. What have we Bing covering? Is that our search engine?
Yeah, I guess, I don't know.
See, I get very petty. See, I just focus on a spelling mistake. These aren't positive qualities that come out of a person. But how is this of help to me? How is this of any help to me?
Oh, yeah, it's not. I mean...
First of all, if this guy responds and says anything, boy, did I play him.
Yeah.
Because how would he have known that I'm addressing this on the show he's skipping?
That's right. Wow.
See, I shouldn't have said that out mm-hmm. loud, mm-hmm. because now he will think twice about, huh, real funny joke. Now he's going to know that I know that he listened to the show. See, this is the kind of... This is your mind and what it does on Twitter. My brain... I've lost a brain cell in the last 60 seconds. Guaranteed. Like, what a stupid open door we provide to people.
You should get off of Twitter right now.
Oh, it's God.
Clearly unhealthy.
And if I said I hated Periscope 2 weeks ago, this thing must die. Like, just for legal purposes. There are now comedians that are getting upset because people are, like, they're periscoping, like, sets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a no-no. When you're at a stand-up show, I mean, you are not allowed to record people's sets. A lot of them, they're working material out. So now, you've got this app to essentially, we are now going to monitor people 24/7, and this hit.
They're basically security cameras at any.
It's brutal, and we're imposing this on ourselves. I was at a bar last week, and I'm sitting there having a drink, And there's these two girls at the bar, like, laughing towards one another, and she's got her phone out, and she's recording some dude just, like, at the other end of the bar, who she clearly doesn't know, and she had her phone up for, like, 5 minutes. Like, must have been periscoping here. It was like, how... This app must be abolished. I hate Periscope with every fiber of my being. I think it is so stupid.
How do you feel?
Hey, I'm living right now. Want to watch?
Yeah. How do you feel? Well, how do you feel about just camera video in general, like internet streaming video in general? Like, what about YouTube?
That's all controlled. You are controlling what you put on.
What's the difference?
I am opting into viewing something. If I am just, if I just hold this camera, you're going to the bathroom, and I just walk in. You're on the internet right now. Mm-hmm. If I'm of any substance, I was like, hey, go to Periscope right now, and I've got 5,000 people now, and I'm just going to put this on you. Mm-hmm. What is your reaction? Are you going to have a freak out on the internet for 5,000 people? Oh, you're yelling? There's now 6,000. Waiting, pissing, in the bathroom right now, live.
Right, yeah. But I don't think it's exclusive to Periscope, though. It's more of a problem with camera phones in general. We have this technology.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, we have a camera anywhere.
We're doing this to ourselves. I mean, all those complaints about, like, all of this surveillance, primarily more in the United States than Canada, but it's like, this is all on you.
I mean, I think camera phones have added a lot of benefits to our lives. It's just people abusing it and not respecting, you know, the rules that come with the responsibility.
Well, what do you enjoy about, you know, such things? I get it.
Camera phones? The fact that I can share my moments with family members? The fact that I can, you know, I don't know, record.
But that always existed.
If I could record a lecture, if I was still in school, I could just record a lecture. And that's easy. You know, I could take a photo of basically any note. I don't take notes anymore. I just take photos of, like, oh, these instructions.
All this technology has existed, though, for years. Your ability
Not on a phone, not as readily
No, not available. On a phone, but on a device. I mean, you could always record a lecture. You could always take a picture of somebody.
Okay, but I'm saying this is easier because it's from a device that I'm already carrying.
Well, what's the next step? What is the next step? Is it going to be
I think
recording devices? Like, I can put in my contact lens and I can record a private conversation and then upload it?
No, I think people will eventually start to police themselves. And, I mean...
Oh, they're doing right. They're incriminating themselves right now.
If you posted that video of me pissing, I mean, you'd probably get as much negativity. You'd probably get more negativity than me shouting at somebody for taking a photo of me pissing.
No, these morons would laugh. They'd laugh at you. Even though I'm in the wrong.
Some would.
This is the public we deal with. Maybe the phone is the next to go.
Anyway, so we're doing an MMA review.
Oh, today. That's right. Where cameras followed around this individual for months and months, and he didn't have a moment's privacy throughout pretty much a year of his life.
He agreed to it.
He signed up for this.
He wanted it.
This was from our good pals at RTE2 out of Ireland.
They're not our pals.
We
don't know them.
They're huge fans of ours.
I doubt that.
I'm hoping this endears us a bit more to the Irish audience, because when we did our review of the ICW documentary, you know, you and I did not name this the greatest documentary to ever be viewed.
Yeah, because
there were some upset people.
Well, yeah. So what? But that doesn't reflect anything about the promotion. Doesn't reflect anything about the country, certainly. It was about the production.
You're being way too rational. You gotta be irrational.
Okay.
I really feel like I just hate people today.
Just relax.
This was a series that I had wanted to watch for a long time, and it now falls into those things where things I want to watch, but also thinking ahead being something that we could possibly review this. So why am I going to watch this now, take notes for no reason, and then maybe we don't review it?
Right.
Or even worse, which I've done a number of times, watch something, and then we review it. And I've got to rewatch it because I haven't taken notes and don't have the same recollections.
Okay, just save all those. Anything you want to watch?
I think I'm just going to take notes for everything I watch now. Even non-wrestling and MMA stuff. Like when I sit down and watch...
Jurassic World.
You know what I've started watching is, I don't know why, the new Dwayne Johnson show, Ballers. where he plays this ex-football player who's hooked on pain medication, which I guess a natural bridge for pro wrestlers, and now he's a sports agent. Okay. It's like a real poor man's Entourage, kind of, or like an Arliss.
Is it good?
I'm two episodes in, and I feel episode three will be my decision time on whether I'm going to continue with this show. It hasn't blown me away, but it's a half hour long, so it's hard to complain about a half hour show, given the length of other shows I watch every week.
Yeah.
So that's it. I'm going to go on a lot of tangents today. I just feel it's one of those days. But we're going to start with episode 1 of 6. Mm-hmm. These episodes were all pretty easy to watch. 20, 22 minutes per episode. Mm-hmm. And great access they had to Conor McGregor, which they lucked in to a degree. I mean, they had previously done a feature on Conor McGregor, kind of his introduction into the UFC and going into the Max Holloway fight in August 2013. It was during that fight that McGregor suffered his knee injury, which would keep him out of action for the next 11 months. And during that time, I mean, Conor's kind of star continued to grow, even though he wasn't actively fighting during that year. And it all built up to the UFC going back to Ireland with the card in Dublin last July, where Conor was originally, he was going to be taking on Cole Miller. Cole Miller got hurt, and Diego Brandão filled in. And that card in Dublin was an incredible atmosphere. One of the most memorable fight pass events. One of the most memorable events the UFC has put on, I think, in the last number of years. And it was solely on the back of Conor McGregor and this Irish backdrop. You couldn't have asked for a better outcome. Conor looked tremendous in that fight. And that's kind of how we approach episode 1, the comeback, all about his rehab over that year and going into the Brandão fight.
I imagine, you know, this RTE, they're probably going to follow him for his entire career.
They're never going away.
No.
Until Conor has to sit them down and be like, all right, guys, it's been a good run.
I imagine.
You're always here.
I mean, just with these 6 episodes alone, they must have followed him for, what, like 2 years?
I mean, at this point, the Holloway fight was August 2013, and we're going right up to the Seaver fight and the fallout, which was this past January.
And guaranteed there are a ton of cameras following him right now, you know, in the lead up to this weekend. So I imagine this will be like almost like a life, like at least, you know, a many years stretch of a biography by the time it's all finished from RTE.
Yeah. We got to kind of what you enjoy about these episodes. Yes, Conor is the glue of each of these episodes, but you get to see his team around him, both in the gym and his family. And of all the family members, you can see where Conor gets this kind of swagger from. His father, Tony McGregor.
Yes.
Best supporting actor in these 6 episodes.
Not to the level of Conor.
He's this toned-down Conor, but man, this guy's got some personality.
He's like an eccentric soccer dad. Or sorry, football dad.
Yes. His mother, Margaret, and then he has a sister, Erin, who are kind of just smaller roles in all of this. They took them to Iceland, where we see them training throughout.
Yeah, I wonder if that's a common thing for people in Ireland.
Well, their specific camp, they do go to Iceland quite a lot. That's where Gunnar Nelson is from, one of his teammates. So they train.
So like the SBG guys go all the time to.
Frequently. I don't know how frequently they do it, but for this particular camp, I mean, he kind of explained kind of getting out of the spotlight of Ireland where the fight was going to be with Diego Brandão, kind of getting away from that. Lots of dubstep throughout this, tying in with the UFC fighter kit reveal last week.
Sure.
Boy, if dubstep, if ever there was a official death to dubstep, that fighter kit reveal was it. It's painful. It's painful, painful music. We spoke with John Kavanaugh, his coach, and they explained how he's going to obliterate the featherweight division, take it to a bigger level, and now upcoming is the easy part, the fighting portion. And in a weird way, Conor McGregor has been able to establish himself as this incredible personality, which you see so many fighters, and the level of talent is so high, and yet so many of them fumble at the aspect that Conor excels at, which is getting the audience to care about what your skill set is.
It's not necessarily something you can train. I mean, in pro wrestling, we'll kind of beg to differ. You know, the fact, like, how many people have we seen come in with no real personalities? But I think you need a bit of a base. And in the case of Conor McGregor,
it's to feel real that this is the person that is not
somebody who's outgoing enough, and somebody who's in Conor's sense, though, he's obviously very outgoing, but it's almost like he's so unaware of judgment. You know what I mean? He's just like, he just says whatever's on his mind, and he does it without any real hesitation. I wonder how much of it is premeditated. I wonder how much of it he does plan to say. But anytime he does talk, it feels incredibly real and unrehearsed.
Well, and that's, I'm sure throughout this show, we will often make certain comparisons to professional wrestling. But you look at Conor McGregor, and many people see him as a bad guy, as a heel, but to a lot of people, especially in Ireland, you could not have this greater babyface. And a lot of that comes from this guy's confidence. He has an incredible amount of it. He is always defiant in what he says. And then he goes out and he performs exactly as he outlines. And that's the easiest way for an audience to get behind someone. And that very much applies to professional wrestling. Having baby faces you believe in, who when they say something, you're behind them, that they are going to go out and do what they're going to say. And that, to me, is one of the defining traits of any top level star, is that confidence, which people, they want to believe in it. And when it actually comes to fruition, where the talk matches the actions, you have a superstar in most cases, and that has been the case here with Conor McGregor. The person that had to have been featured second to Conor McGregor is his girlfriend, Dee Devlin, who, I mean, is keyed every single time she appears on screen, and she is at this guy's side night and day, in the gym, everywhere, airplanes, public events, everywhere. This girl does not leave Conor McGregor. And I don't know if that is a concern as he gets into more and more stardom. But this girl is every single scene, she is there with him.
She's there a lot, yeah.
There is no separating Conor McGregor and his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So she was featured throughout. And we kind of just go into a lot of the fight week stuff going into Dublin, the weigh-ins, which were really tremendous, of kind of Diego Brandão going into Ireland knowing he's playing the bad guy, and he pretty much amplified that. I think Brandão had a good...
It's very interesting, because Conor is the type of fighter, and Chael Sonnen, they're the types of fighters who will pull you into a storyline. We'll try to turn a fight into a story, and try to make characters out of people that aren't used to playing characters. Like, and it's so funny to see, you know, in this case, Chad Mendes on all these embedded shows, all of a sudden now he has to enter a war of words that none of these guys are ever used to. These are, like, as dry as hockey players, you know, and all of a sudden they have to become pro wrestlers and kind of play this game. And it's fun to see them try, and in most cases not do a very good job of it.
But there's also, you know, to your point, that people don't want to see guys trying to put on an act. And when you're legitimately angering an opponent, which you can see in Jose Aldo, which you can see in Chad Mendes, at the very least, it may not be very much, it's not polished when they're saying things, but there is an emotion behind it that people detect, that this guy is getting under the skin of Chad Mendes.
What I think I more mean is just their lack of comfort in front of a camera, in expressing, you know, anger in the way that somebody like Conor or even like Jose Aldo was comfortable in doing.
The best part of this was the McGregor family getting ready for the big card in Dublin, where they have a family party the day of the fight. They all are dressed up in, like, their best outfits. And then Tony McGregor, my favorite character in all of this, gives a speech and announces that we hold all the aces, as he pulls out
It was actually a poem.
Oh, it was a poem he was reading.
He made the poem up.
Oh, he wrote
like,
the poem?
Yeah, it was like he's like the genius. Like he just made a rhyming.
Oh, he pulled out cards. He had props for his poem.
Yeah, Jesus.
I'd just like to thank everybody for coming here today. In honor of the event, I've penned a few words, so just give me a moment, okay? It's just a little small poem, nothing spectacular. It's not J.M. Millington sing, okay? It's just me, Tony McGregor. No, it's fine. Okay. Conor said he's going to bring the UFC back to town. It's here now, and he's not leaving anyone hanging around. His boys are with him, all on the card, fighting fit, staying ready, and training very hard. Now listen up, everybody, let there be no worried faces, because tonight, in the O2 Dublin, we hold all the aces.
Oh, and then they rented a limo to take them to the fights, and you have never seen a more decked out limo inside. They're drinking champagne.
Yeah,
this was awesome. This is
a Bentley limo, and you know, like this, like these documentaries, this one from RTE, I didn't necessarily find that it was a documentary where a real thread or a real storyline was really forced. If anything, like, it felt like almost like a home, like a personal home video of just scenes snipped out to, you know, like maybe the most essential portions. But you almost, it almost just kind of naturally plays out the course of the events leading up to this fight. And these are just little small moments that you get, including bits of the family.
There's a much truer sense of the word documentary, where it was very much documenting something as opposed to high drama, conflict, and elaborate characters that make the documentary. I mean, this was just essentially your behind the scenes look at everything around Conor McGregor going into the biggest fights of his career.
Mm-hmm. And all that, though, in a way, like it is a build up to it. Well, obviously it is a build up, but just to even show what his family is gearing up for, like how much this means to his family to have to spend the money to rent a limo and to get dressed up. I mean, that in itself is usually a lot of pressure, but to think about how, you know, it's that plus it's your whole country behind you leading up to this fight, like that in itself is sort of the storytelling, I think.
And then the first episode ends with the finish, and there was UFC footage all over this, including the finish of this fight. I mean, not the easiest footage to come by. I don't care who you are, but it was Conor McGregor finishing Diego Brandão in the opening round.
They made many exceptions for dudes' documentaries, you know?
Yeah, but then there's others where they've given no footage to people's documentaries.
RTE, though, I imagine, like, aren't they, you know, are they a public broadcaster? Anyway,
yes.
Wrong person asked. So they're like the CBC?
Yes. Okay. That's my understanding. So, Jay Hunter will correct us if not.
Yes.
So that was episode one. Episode two.
Yeah. Sorry, just my thoughts on episode one. Like, you know, going into these documentaries, I think I expected all I had really seen of Conor prior to this was just the Conor McGregor in interviews, like the Conor McGregor that was just kind of on. You know what I mean?
It's like a 10.
Yeah, where he does like just basically makes fun of people and trash talks and does it very well. But here you kind of see a more very subdued version of him. It's still a very lively, high energy guy, but not the one that's always type of trash, you know, trash talking and stuff.
He's the Vincent Van Gogh of MMA, as he said. He's given up his mind for his art. Episode 2 is entitled The Fight Business. Coming off the Diego Brandão win, he was then announced pretty quickly for this turnaround that he was going to be fighting Dustin Poirier at UFC 178 that he called the Hillbilly Hoedown he was going to have with Dustin Poirier. And with that, he was going to be flying to Las Vegas to meet up with Lorenzo Fertitta and his manager, Adi Attar, to draw up a new contract for the fighter. And UFC 178 was scheduled to be a massive blockbuster card because it was going to feature, at first, John Jones, Alexander Gustafsson, but then Gustafsson was injured, so Daniel Cormier was put in, and it was afterwards with the whole brawl, which will be documented in this episode, that fight took on a whole new life of its own. But of course, then Cormier was injured and that fight got postponed to January. And that card, it kind of did come onto the shoulders of McGregor and Poirier, which wasn't in the main event position, but the week of the fight, that was the main event of that pay-per-view.
What ended up being the main event?
Demetrius Johnson, Chris Cariazzo.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was also Eddie Alvarez's debut on the card. But we see Conor arriving in Las Vegas and meets up with Lorenzo Fertitta, And immediately Connor is pitching Lorenzo on doing a stadium show in Ireland. It's what he has always talked about he wants to do at Croke Park, which the problem they have with running a stadium show in Ireland beyond the weather is the fact that there is a curfew in Ireland. They don't want to adjust the time for the North American audience that would be buying this potentially on pay-per-view, that there's a certain curfew and they wouldn't be able to run the show past a certain hour. And that's kind of left them without the ability to run this stadium that they're trying to figure out. But it seems that, you know, Connor is confident that the right fight, he would fill this stadium. And certainly that argument could be made. I mean, it's a rabid fan base in Ireland for Conor McGregor, for the UFC.
He really wants it, and then he's proposing it to Lorenzo, and you could just tell Lorenzo's like, trying to like, okay,
you never know.
Calm down, buddy. Yeah, yeah, we'll do that eventually.
And then we got the famous press conference back in August of last year for UFC 178, where we're seeing all the scrums with the media, a pretty intense stare down with Poirier and McGregor, but those were not the the focused upon subjects that day. Of course, we got Jones and Cormier with Dave Schaller in the middle of it all and the big brawl at the MGM Grand Garden lobby, and then McGregor's reaction afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And that would set up a very big fight with Jones and Cormier, but it wouldn't take place until January. He signed a new contract with the UFC, and then we got highlights of a Q&A involving Conor, Poirier, Cormier, and Jones to drum up ticket sales.
It's really cool to see a UFC fighter go in to sign a contract. Obviously, we don't see the negotiation, but to see Conor go in and then immediately the camera cuts to after the meeting, he's just like got a big smile on his face. You know, the mood is just like, his mood is just like way more upbeat than he even typically is. He just like, all of a sudden, you know, his life had just gotten that much better, it felt.
Yes. Yeah,
probably. Do you know how much he makes per fight?
It's, you know, you've got to imagine he's certainly one of those guys that's cut in on the back end of the pay-per-view. I mean, rule of thumb you go by is that every single fight card they release, the commission will typically release the purses for all of the fighters. And in the most part, very modest figures. Anyone like a Conor McGregor, and you see their base pay of what they get with their win bonus, sizable bonuses on the back end. I mean, no one is making that amount if you're in a main event position, especially. It would not surprise me that had this fight with Aldo gone down, that this guy would have cleared $2.5-3 million for that fight. And maybe that's even conservative. I mean, had this one been able to hit 900,000 buys or so, it would have been certainly north of 2.5.
And just to watch all this footage, you know, thinking about that, like, to go from where this guy must have been, you know, simply 3 years ago in his life, to go from that to all of a sudden being in Vegas, being in Lorenzo Fertitta's room and signing this new contract for however many zeros, to think about all that in the back of your mind as you're watching this footage, it makes it that much, a bit more special.
It goes back to that first interview he did with Ariel Helwani, where the big famous line was that he was so broke, he didn't even have a pot to piss in. He says during that interview. So, yeah, a very rapid, life-changing experience for one Conor McGregor, who you watch with all of the excess, and it very much ties into this one character on Ballers, who's just making all this money, but he supports everybody around him, and this guy's living an insane lifestyle.
Yeah, we cut right to the scene of him trying on all these new suits, which he's very known for. I mean, I think he's probably quickly becoming the style icon of the UFC.
He is Ric Flair.
Yeah,
2015.
Exactly. He's a very young Ric Flair. Like, it's as if we, you know, in this documentary, we got to see the early days of Ric Flair when he just, you know, started to make a ton of money.
And the show just ends with him describing Dustin Poirier as an average journeyman fighter, and we learned he was a fan of the Ninja Turtles and the Simpsons.
Yes.
Episode 3, The Takeover. This was UFC 178 Fight Week, and another big stare down involving the two. And then Connor noting that he had reached out to try and get Arnold Schwarzenegger to walk him to the cage at UFC 178. Unfortunately, this walkout would not occur. But Arnold Schwarzenegger legitimately is a fan of this guy. And recently, he was doing a promotion for the Terminator movie. And he was asked about Conor McGregor, and he started talking about him.
Yeah. I imagine at the time, he probably, you know, he probably had other stuff going on. And I wonder, I don't know if Arnold would walk somebody out if it wasn't a headlining bout.
Oh,
for
Arnold.
For this?
What an ego on him.
For this, though, I mean, do you think he'll get... Well, Sinead O'Connor is singing him out.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, do you think Connor will have anybody else as part of his entourage?
Well, it depends if Arnold will have to... He'd have to wear a Reebok shirt, right?
Ooh. Mm.
Couldn't wear any outside clothing.
Yeah, not sure.
So
that The Rock's a fan, too.
Oh, there's lots of guys, you know, celebrities that have...
Maybe Vince will walk him out.
Oh, boy. They would have to walk in tandem together.
They'd have to do the same walk, yeah.
And then Connor's suggesting a movie with Arnold, The Unbeatables. For a very clever guy, not the most clever title. Then there was this interesting portion where he talked about his own analysis of Dustin Poirier's eyes.
Yeah, during a stare down.
Yeah, and just not being able to follow his movement. And he's handicapping himself because of the emotion.
Yeah.
And he said the same things about Jose Aldo, stating that when he had the stare downs with him on the world tour a few months back, he could sense the same things in Jose Aldo and detect that emotion that he sees as a weakness he can exploit in fighters. This guy, at his very base, is incredibly analytical and has an understanding of just body movement. I mean, this guy is, at his core, a nerd about science and movement of the body and just how the body works, and certainly into philosophy as well, reads a lot of inspirational quotes. I mean, there's a lot of depth to this guy that we don't always see.
Yeah, and this stuff about his stare downs are really interesting to see, and this is just a topic that I think I was first introduced to working on a lot of breakdowns and things like that with Robin Black, our MMA analyst here, who... We've done a lot of shoots talking to sports psychologists, and in particular, one of them was about just how Robin did a breakdown, a great breakdown on alpha posturing.
Yes,
and that was one where like he made comparisons to animals in the wild and how. You know, when they faced off in some type of, like, when two bucks faced off in a fight, a lot of it was about posturing. And here, in the stare downs, you almost get a version of that in modern times with humans, where I really do believe a lot of that psychological advantage is a heavy aspect of the result of a fight. In particular, with somebody like Connor, who is able to, I think... outwit his opponent so well prior to a fight and embarrass his opponents in the media before a fight, that I'm sure some of that plays into the actual outcome of the match.
Well, it's also, I mean, that psychology of fighting, I think at times you take for granted. You watch so many fights and you follow this stuff. And when you break it down to its core, I mean, you have two individuals that for 8 to 10 weeks are preparing to hurt you. And it lends itself to a lot of these fighters in order to grasp that basic concept. You get a lot of tons of fighters that they talk about speaking with sports psychologists, confidence issues, and as well, a leniency on faith, on things above their power that are going to get them through this extremely pressing task of going into a cage with somebody and fighting with one of them. And you see those patterns throughout all of these fighters who will talk about the power of positivity and things that people that are not involved in fighting might just scoff at. But these are real confidence boosters and enforcers for a lot of these
and
fighters.
Confidence is a real thing. It's a real, you know, scientific trait that I think is very important in sports and in any type of competition.
Many fighters that, you know, you'll hear about them just being incredible in the gym and they can't pull that trigger in front of an audience with all of the things that surround them. And what ultimately is different between a sparring session in front of your close friends in a gym environment versus a venue of 14,000 people and everything that accompanies that, and there's cameras on you and Periscope apps, I mean, that are just putting so much of a spotlight on you where it's a pressure to perform as opposed to just in a private environment where you are just focusing on performing and not the spectacle of it all.
And these Conor stare downs are real. Like any champion, like you watch a Ronda Rousey stare down, it's all really interesting to see because somebody like Conor will not, you know, will not look inferior in a stare down. Even if he is the, you know, the underdog in the books, he will always just kind of come out and just act crazy with his big bulgy eyes. And in contrast, his opponents often are the ones that are kind of backing away, even if they are favorites in the books.
Mm-hmm. One of the best scenes of any of these episodes was Conor arriving at Lorenzo's office, and was it his
gym or something?
His gym,
yeah.
And I guess they just walked in on Lorenzo because he's in this wife beater, like a look you will never ever see Lorenzo Fertitta in. And they immediately cut to like, I guess 5-10 minutes in the future because all of a sudden Lorenzo's got a shirt on, but this white beater he's on for like 10 seconds and it looks so un-Lorenzo Fertitta. Like it'd be like walking in on a room and Vince McMahon's in his undershirt. I mean, just
he's probably working out.
I guess so. Lorenzo Fertitta. I mean, my goodness. So McGregor's family is coming over from Ireland for the Poirier fight, and
they arrive in his hotel room,
and he does not seem happy about it.
Couldn't give a fuck. He wouldn't even get up to like shake their hands.
No, I noticed this too.
It felt like he killed their buzz. Imagine you're just like after a hard day of training, you're sitting in your hotel room watching TV. You just want some alone time. And here comes your family, your loud family, and your dad reading poems and pulling out
throwing aces in the air. Yeah. They note 3,000 Irish fans are also flying over, which is around the number. I believe it's like 2,500 tickets have been sold to people in Ireland for this Saturday's card in Las Vegas.
That's incredible. And in the first episode, I didn't really get a sense of, you know, just I didn't think the doc captured the audience well enough to really get a sense of the atmosphere. It really did that here in the second.
Oh, the singing at the weigh-ins. Yeah. I mean, it's such a lively that to me was the coolest part of the main event. Was that Las Vegas events typically when there's a big fight involving an Anderson Silva and in this case Jose Aldo, there's a huge contingent of Brazilian fans that come up for these cards, and you mix that in with the Irish fans that were going to be there. That atmosphere of Brazil and Ireland was going to be insane.
Yeah.
And you're still going to have probably a ton of Brazilians that have bought tickets for this card. You have a $7 million gate. It's just not going to be – it's not like they have a dog in the fight in Chad Mendes. It's more this guy that's trying to beat our common enemy in Conor McGregor. Mm. So you'll still, I'm sure, have a pretty cool atmosphere, but nothing like had Aldo been fighting McGregor.
I wonder if you're Brazilian, will you be cheering for Chad Mendes or will you be cheering for Conor because you eventually want to see that fight?
If they're smart and they want their hometown, home country hero to get that big payday, they should be rooting on Conor McGregor because the money fight is no question Aldo McGregor, whereas a third Aldo Mendes fight, good God, that's the difference of millions there. Mm-hmm. So I just made like some stupid observations here, such as an close-up of Conor McGregor's iPad, which was all scratched up, which kind of ruins the gimmick, I thought. Like, this thing looked like shit. Upgrade the iPad, Conor.
You can probably afford a new one.
There was also, on fight day, there was a sign on his room that read Conor, C-O-N-N-O-R, McGregor, which is the same way Reebok spelt his name up for the fighter kit reveal.
I'm sure it's his version of Polak.
Yeah, exactly.
Or W-E-I.
And the best was, of all these different Irish fighters and Conor and all these people they're interviewing, John Kavanaugh is the one that gets captioned on an Irish broadcaster.
That's funny. I'll be honest, though, like for the first, it took some getting used to trying to understand, you know, the way he spoke. I probably understood like 80% to start. Now I think I have a better grasp. Did you notice there's like one disgruntled, I'd say American fan? Right there, or like a non-British fan, or non-Irish fan, I mean. And then he was just like telling all the Irish fans to go home, back to England.
Oh, I didn't see that.
He was just yelling, go back to England.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, this crowd is just awesome. All this crowd footage is just great.
Yeah, it was just a tremendous atmosphere. And, okay, this was the best
actual storytelling that RTE2 did throughout this series was we had the pre-match or the pre-fight interview meeting that all the referees will do with all of the fighters beforehand. They go over just, you know, the basics, what they're looking for. If they're in trouble, this is what we expect of you. If you're in trouble, I will not call the fight, blah, blah, blah. Involving Herb Dean and specifically noting what is the back of the head and getting all of this, Connor asking a follow-up question, and this was all done within about 60 seconds, and then Herb Dean went off. But this would play a big factor because this fight, at the time, a bit of a controversial finish involving Connor McGregor cracking him right around the area that Herb Dean did describe as a legal area.
And we go to the fight where that takes place, and then we go right to the press conference afterwards where one of the reporters,
Kevin
Ioli, in particular, asked just about that, and Connor just brings up, I had a meeting with Herb, which we luckily had footage of and saw, and, you know, it was completely justified.
Yeah, there's always been kind of a back and forth, but the rule is essentially to the most basic form is that back of the head, it's the Mohawk rule, where if you are having a Mohawk down the back of your head, that is the illegal portion. Whereas others have thought, oh, it's the headphone rule, where the back of the headphones is illegal, and it is the Mohawk rule.
If you had a Mohawk, you probably should get punched in the back of the head.
Perhaps. The Chuck Liddell rule, maybe.
Joking. But, you know, even...
Our Mohawk listeners, even throw there.
Even aside from that, I thought them showing, like, they spent an incredibly long time just showing him warming up in the back. And while, you know, like, another production might have just seen all that as extra boring footage because there's no dialogue, I thought, like, this was some of the most dramatic stuff prior to a fight, because we saw all that was leading up to this. We saw, you know, his family making the trip over. We saw the 3,000 Irish fans coming over. We saw him sign that big new lucrative contract. Like, just to, there's a lot for the viewer to think about when they see him doing something, and you're just like left wondering, wow, what type of pressure, what type of stress must be going on through this guy's head? And, you know, just to add a bit of extra editing, they did play around with the music a lot. They played some Al Green here to almost contrast the high pressure stress environment of this scene. I just like that a lot because, you know, it leaves you wondering what's going on in his head right now, moments right before the fight. You have Burt Watson in the back shouting out, oh, 5 minutes, you know, 10 minutes before your thing.
Yeah. Some of the most incredible stuff I've ever observed firsthand backstage is just going out and watching a fighter go from his locker room, being walked out throughout the back, and just watching them as they're preparing for this incredible just experience, life-changing experience, potentially, as they're getting ready for that. And I think it's fascinating to watch them in the minutes, the half hour leading up to a fight and getting into a headspace of they're going into a violent altercation with another high-level fighter.
Like, think about, I mean, I've done a couple jiu-jitsu competitions, and I was stressed out as hell for just even something that small. Think about the stress of something like that, or even think about the stress of a very important job interview. Like, think about that multiplied by 1,000, and that might not even come close to what this guy is feeling in the back right here.
I've been told before during a jiu-jitsu class, you're sparring with Wei, and I've got 2 minutes to mentally prepare for the bronze medalist. Right. And, I mean, that's pretty stressful.
Play some Al Green in the background.
Yeah, that's what I need. Yeah. That's what I did miss the fact that they did, and I guess there were certain rights issues, but they did have to eliminate his entrance music, the Biggie theme.
No, they didn't. Comes out.
On my version, it did. Oh, you
Where
know
did
what?
You watch it?
I watched this on Fight Pass.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't hear Al Green on mine. So
I'm
guessing Fight Pass.
I'm guessing they got rid of all the copywritten stuff, because on the broadcast version, which I saw,
that makes sense, because the other RTE broadcast we've watched, there has been commercial music on it. So I was very confused by this on the Fight Pass version that I guess for legalities they had to get rid of.
Oh, man.
It took a lot out of it.
It was a big part of it, I thought, that scene in particular.
Oh, well, there we go. Yeah. Watching different versions. I should not have gone the direct route on Fight Pass. So anyway, he rocks Dustin Poirier with a left,
bit of a protest over whether it was behind the back of the head. And I remember talking to Dustin Poirier about this only before his last fight recently. And, I mean, he doesn't offer any excuses. He flat out says Conor succeeded in getting him way too emotional for that fight. It was mm-hmm. and just he was beaten by that, and Conor won the fight legit.
It's a tactic. It's a tactic as much as him, you know, practicing that left jab or whatever it is. It's the psychological advantage.
It gets into the fighter's headspace of I can't show weakness to that fighter, and just the fact that that is a priority for you, not to show that weakness to him, you're already trying to put out a front, and yeah. It's enough for Conor McGregor in that sense that people will always look at, oh, what's the point of these stare downs of fight week stuff? There's a whole psychology to a fight, and I mean, go watch any Joanna Jędrzejczyk stare down where she just tries to
Don't watch the last one.
It was that one was really ridiculous. Bad. That was utterly ridiculous with a Gollum ring being presented by Jessica Penne. Oh God. But nonetheless, I mean, her goal is to fuck with her opponent's head. Yeah. And she succeeded with Carla Esparza, and she attempted it with Jessica Penne in her last two fights. And then afterwards, Joe Rogan's interviewing him, and Conor is also now, he goes out and he now predicts his finishes, and he called this one that he would finish him in the first round, compares himself to Mystic Mac, calling his finish, and then noted afterwards that he cracked his tooth in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That was his post-match assessment.
They also show, this documentary also shows everything that takes place immediately after the fight. And, you know, this kind of ranges from, you know, the very exciting and typical stuff of him being greeted by, you know, his quarterman, his other fighters in the back. We see like a little fun exchange with him and Donald Cerrone where Conor puts on a suit and Cerrone's like, oh, I forgot mine. And, you know, but just even the mundane of like taking press photos right afterwards, you know, and Conor's hair says that he wishes that the KO was a little cleaner than what he had. I mean, all this footage, I think, just kind of adds it, like, again, doesn't really, they're not essential parts to any type of story, but because you see him go through with all these little things, you really feel like you're there with him. Like, you feel like you're living this incredible life along with him.
Just to add, that UFC 178 card, it ended up doing 205,000 buys, not a spectacular number. At the same time, they did really push forward, you know, Johnson and Cariasso in that main event position, in the loss of Jones and Cormier on that fight. But I feel that number, had you taken Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier off this card, you would have had a much smaller buy number. I mean, Demetrius Johnson and Ali Bogotinov just a couple of months earlier had done almost 100,000 less than that. So that's what you're talking about that Conor made, in my opinion, a big difference in. And as much as Cerrone Alvarez had some buzz to it, I mean, that week, the grudge and the focus was McGregor Poirier. So I think they, if anything, deserve a bit of credit for that number, if not the majority of it. So that, and of course, the scene to end the episode is Conor McGregor doing the Vince McMahon power walk, saying, "You've got no chance."
No chance, that's what you got.
Yes, if there's any doubt that this was an homage to Vince, he actually says, "No chance, that's what you got."
So there we go.
So clearly a big wrestling fan.
Oh, he was definitely a big wrestling fan, as he's alluded to as well in the past and mentioned it. Episode 4, The Suite Life. It's the aftermath.
S-U-I-T-E.
It's the aftermath of the Dustin Poirier fight, where he also had gone in with his hand was injured going into this fight, and afterwards working with this hand wrap that he went into the fight with. And he meets again with Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta, who are raving about his performance in Dublin. And then Conor goes home to Ireland, and there's this giant Conor McGregor poster in the streets. And then he's on the road again, going to Rio de Janeiro for UFC 179.
You neglected to talk about the $7,500 a night hotel suite.
Is that what it said? I didn't even catch that. $7,500 a night. Well, that's the suite life way. I mean, this guy, hey, I don't know his financial situation, but, I mean, this guy's renting out a mansion for this entire camp going into the fight with Mendez this weekend with all of his team there. I mean, this guy's making a lot, and he's spending a ton. He is Ric Flair everything, man. Minus the divorces at this point.
At this point, yeah.
Dee Devlin will not allow multiple wives. So he goes to Brazil, and again, we get Father Tony's promo on Conor McGregor, who's coming for Jose Aldo.
There's a little portion prior to this where Conor talks about quitting his job and ending up having a big argument with his dad and a bit of a separation from his dad for a period of time because his dad was just flat out against it. And then his coach, John Kavanaugh, is right there talking about how he gets calls all the time now from mothers of 16-year-olds who want to drop out of school to become fighters. And so he always tells them that it takes a very rare personality and a very rare work ethic to be able to succeed in the sport. And I just found it amazing because they're saying all this while they're sitting poolside at a $7,500 a night hotel suite.
They showed the clip that is now getting tons of play going into this Saturday's fight from BT Sport with our pal Gareth Davies. The shit disturber here.
Mm-hmm.
He had Conor McGregor in studio, and then they had Chad Mendes joining them on the line. Chad was going into this interview thinking it was just going to be an interview with Gareth to promote the Aldo fight, not aware that Conor was there in studio, and we ended up getting this back and forth between Conor and Chad Mendes with the famous line of Chad saying, "What do you know? What are you going to do when you deal with a wrestler?" And Conor saying, "I'll rest my balls on your forehead," which is now in heavy rotation. But they never showed this on the episode.
It wasn't part of the all. I mean, Chad Mendes wasn't even introduced.
No, but that was where the segment was most notable for. And then we go to Brazil with Conor. He's learning a capoeira.
Yeah, I mean, I think it looked like he'd always been a fan of it. And if you see him, you know, just kind of he does like a very bad version of capoeira, like just when he's introduced in the octagon and all that. So for all the shit he talks about Aldo and the favelas and all that, he clearly has a real respect and admiration for Brazilian culture.
And then for the fan Q&A in Brazil, I mean, this is where this guy understands the money aspect of what he does. I mean, he is going into Brazil here to do a fan Q&A.
Oh, this Q&A looked awesome.
I watched this thing. It was a shit show. But for all the right reasons, he wanted an armored guard on the stage holding a gun for effect. And they pretty much had to tell Conor that is not happening.
Is it possible, when I go out for this Q&A, to have him there with the pistol in his hand?
Of course not.
Why? Is it possible to have him just there with his hands crossed and the shades on? Just like that, looking out on my shoulder.
I'll have to ask.
Just in case. That would be a statement, yeah?
We are not bringing an armored guard with you onto the stage. Yeah. But that's how this guy thinks.
Yeah.
He's thinking of
how do I get heat?
Exactly. Exactly. And so many fighters. And it's the pro wrestling side of me that just, it's so sad.
Don't even justify it because you don't even have to say it's your pro wrestling side. This is your combat sports promotion side. This is a real part of boxing. It's a real part of MMA. It's
individualized prize fighting where you are trying to fight for a prize where people are going to pay to watch you fight. And you're not an athlete in the same way a baseball player is an athlete or a football player is. You are, like, your success is based upon how many people give a shit that you are going to fight. There are hundreds of thousands of fights that go on every single year, worldwide. Why are they going to pay to watch your particular fight?
Yeah, like when people talk about Ali Frazier, do we say, when Ali was doing his pro wrestling thing? No, it's a boxing thing. It's a combat sports thing. It's a athletic competition thing. Why do we have superstars in the Olympics? Because oftentimes it's because of their personality and their skill, and that's just what this is. There's no need to qualify it as a pro wrestling thing.
Well, it's a guy in Conor McGregor understanding that element of things that separates him from a lot of fighters that they run away from heat, and they would I'm not going to go fight in Brazil when I'm hated. And these fighters that will pretty much get on their hands and knees in foreign countries and just beg these crowds to love them. And a lot of them become wallflowers. Not every single person needs to endear themselves. And when you have a guy that for whatever reason there is a hatred towards, there are the few exceptions that they will run towards that, like a Michael Bisping or a Conor McGregor, that they see this emotion from people and they don't see that as a, these people aren't endorsing me. They're saying, no, these people hate me and they love this guy and they want to see that collision point. Mm-hmm. So how do we maximize that collision?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's all prize fighting is at the end of the day.
This Q&A was basically Conor shouting at the entire arena. And there are fans here basically, like it played out like I'm sure a pro wrestling scene would have it, back when people thought it was
this
real.
Looked like the WrestleMania press box, the crowd.
What do you mean?
Oh, just people up yelling, screaming.
Oh, yes. But this looked awesome, and Conor's just like yelling right back at him. You know, like just to see a man on stage shouting at the audience was fun.
Then there was a camera on Conor watching the Aldo Mendez fight from last October and applauding the end of the fight, and it was an incredible fight. Some people had this as the fight of the year for 2014. I liked the aspect that Conor, it would have been to me too disingenuous for him to be just shunning the fight or something. I thought it was a cool portion, the fact that he did applaud the performance of Jose Aldo, who won this very hard-fought fight.
And again, he wants to fight Aldo.
Of course, you don't want to.
He wants to fight the best.
That's the key to any promo, is that you never want to bury your opponent. You want to build them up so that it's meaningful when you do fight. And to Jose Aldo's credit, not a guy that is typically viewed upon as this promotional genius, he was ready for this post-fight interview with Brian Stann, and he said, the featherweight division, I'm the king, Chad's the prince, and we've got Conor the Joker.
Yeah.
Like, a great line.
Great line.
And the UFC broadcaster that night, they totally missed the line and never acknowledged it. It was, or maybe it was the translator maybe who screwed it up. I can't remember.
Translator said it here.
Okay, well, I can't remember, but it was not maximized, that line. And it was a great money line for Jose Aldo, who clearly knew in his head what the next fight was and putting all the focus on Conor, who was not their octagon side by mistake.
It really is amazing how much they've managed to accomplish, you know, in this Aldo McGregor build. Between two people who speak different languages, we think about, like, again, to bring it to professional wrestling, how much difficulty there is in just getting two people speaking the exact same language where you can script the rivalry, how tough that is to get interest. But here you have two people speaking completely different languages, and it's the fight I want to see the most this year.
Yeah, there's just that natural. Jose Aldo, I mean, he may not speak English, but he does have a charisma about him.
Totally. If I spoke Portuguese, this guy would be that much bigger of a superstar.
Yeah, and the interviews he does do, primarily in Brazil, I mean, this guy will talk. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's in his native language that he's most comfortable speaking in. And I don't know if the English is as much a handicap as people make it out to be with Jose Aldo, but the proof is in the pudding. This guy has never drawn, despite being the top featherweight dating back to 2009 when he won that title in the WEC. But Conor was that opponent for him that was going to at least provide the biggest featherweight fight in history, and hopefully some of that would be the effect that Anderson Silva got, where he wasn't much of a draw either till he had the program with Chael Sonnen. Mm-hmm. So that wraps up episode 4, and we go to episode 5, Body and Mind. And Conor pretty much sums up the whole industry of fighting, saying prize fighting is quick. You get in, you get rich, and you get out. Mm-hmm. And that is pretty much how you summarize fighting, because there aren't too many happy endings at the end of it. You're going to have long-term damage most likely, so make as much money as you can.
Yeah. We'll tell that to Ken Shamrock, who did not get out very quick.
No, he didn't. He made a lot of money in his life, spent a lot of money in his life, and he has had a lot of issues along the way that he will outline himself. The next fight was set up for Dennis Seaver in Boston. They were going to bring Conor back. And this was notable because this was going to be on free television, a rare Sunday night Fox Sports 1 card, going up against the NFC Championship game. So this was a massive night for sports viewing, and they were hoping to piggyback off that with the Fox relationship, putting Connor inserted for an interview on that game in front of 47 million so-odd fans to promote the fight with Seaver that night, and then having the fight with Seaver actually take place just after the football game wrapped up. But we kind of go through his preparation for it, including an autograph signing for his documentary back in Ireland at an HMV. And this guy came across in this scene. He's great with fans. Mm. Like, very genuine, seemed honestly excited and happy to meet these people as opposed to some chore of signing autographs. I thought it was a rare glimpse at a very human aspect of Conor McGregor that he typically shields.
He seems like somebody who obviously, you know, really embraces and is very comfortable with superstardom and the attention that he's getting.
There wasn't a whole lot to this particular episode.
There's a lot of training footage, which, I mean, I in particular, I'm a big nerd for, just to see, like, the types of warm-up routines this guy does and the types of, like, incredible physical control he has of his body. This guy's able to do, like, a handstand for probably a whole minute if he wanted to, but it reminded me of that Hickson Gracie beach scene in Choke, mm-hmm. where Hickson was just doing all these crazy like breathing exercises, and we had a bit of that with Connor here.
They interviewed him right before Christmas in Ireland about this fight, and he says that he will be foregoing his Christmas dinner, but he's going to feast on a German ham on January the 18th after Christmas, and describes Dennis Seaver first bringing up his drug test failure in the past, and calls him the ugliest little gremlin you've ever seen. Dennis Seaver is not the most appealing man from an aesthetic point of view.
No.
Then he signed the Reebok deal, and they essentially just raid the Reebok store, in particular his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Just taking everything they could possibly see. We met up with Tom Egan, the first Irish fighter to compete in the UFC and part of McGregor's camp. And then the Boston card, as we go to fight week, his teammates Cathal Pendred and Paddy Houlihan were both part of that show in Boston. And he says that 2015 will be his year. He's not looking past Dennis Seaver, but instead he is looking through him. Like, just great lines that this guy constantly just naturally delivers.
I mean, even though the Seaver fight alone is nothing special, him basically, you know, bringing up Aldo as the ultimate goal positions Seaver as an important fight because it's the one obstacle, you know, that stands in his way between him and his ultimate goal. So, I mean, I think about, like, again, I always try to think about how these I love the idea of like building up a fight, and I always think about how it relates to, you know, in professional wrestling where we get a controlled version of it, and in MMA where we get sort of we still get a controlled version of it, but the outcomes are far less you know, predictable, or you can't make up the outcomes necessarily.
And that's, you know, there's an element of that unpredictableness that draws people in that direction. But you look as well, I mean, this Saturday, if you were able to control the outcome, is there one person that with any kind of brain capacity would want Chad Mendes to win this fight on Saturday?
Maybe Vince McMahon.
Perhaps.
Because it's unpredictable.
They'd never see it coming, right? Yeah. Instead, you are putting millions of dollars at stake in this fight on Saturday.
Definitely. That's why it's so interesting.
That's why it is interesting. But, man, you look at professional wrestling where it's like, that is the beauty of professional wrestling, is that if your big star that comes across once in a generation, like Conor McGregor, you can book him in such a way to protect him and maximize all of that. Whereas Conor McGregor, this guy realistically could run into a Chad Mendes right hand in 30 seconds and be knocked out.
Yeah.
And you would watch millions burn. And that would not transfer over to Chad Mendes, who would suddenly become the hot thing at 145 pounds. It would just be lost in Conor McGregor. And professional wrestling, when you scratch your head when a Brock Lesnar returns and we beat him in the first match, and it's like in mixed martial arts, they pray for the right outcome. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's too strong a word for a UFC, that typically they just try to make do with whatever they're handed to them. But this is a cut and dry positive and negative scenario that happens on Saturday. And, you know, in professional wrestling, I think there are people that look at that, man, you have all the advantages, and yet you don't always utilize those advantages, whereas mixed martial arts has none of those, so mm-hmm. you marvel at what they make do with.
In particular with this Dennis Siever fight, I think this can be an example of, you know, that stopgap match prior to your big WrestleMania event, your big SummerSlam event. I almost see the build for this Siever fight as a lesson in how you can book, you know, a battleground main event prior to a SummerSlam. You know, you don't want to give out your big match yet, but you put, you know, your big baby face against, it could be just some random guy who's like at that level, and, you know, position that guy as the stopgap between him and the ultimate goal at SummerSlam or WrestleMania. And that, you know, at least in this case, I think drives enough interest.
Well, after 179, that was the fight a lot of people wanted to see. Aldo McGregor. We had the fight that the public wanted, and you've created that demand. Now we're going to put an obstacle there that they have to get by, and mm-hmm. if they do, that demand just increases, and because what, now we finally got what we want.
Totally, and that's what Chad Mendes is this week. It's like an even bigger obstacle because you've teased us for so long with this Aldo fight.
So it starts with Connor saying that it's been easy so far. The only person to stop him is the one in the mirror. It's smooth sailing at this point. And we just go through Connor's fight week events, including signing 130 fight posters and being told not to sign over anyone's face, including your own. That is a no-no. So even the UFC has their weird stuff. He compares fight week to being an animal in the zoo, asked to do tricks.
It's not just training and fighting. It's not just that. It's a million other things. It's the zoo. You're an animal and you're caught and you're put in the zoo. And you're made dance. You're made do tricks. That's what they're trying to get. So my head up a little bit. Especially on fight week. I just want to show up, fight, get rich and get the out of here. That's it.
The media game is about answering the same question a million different ways. What does it feel to headline a show in Dublin? That was like, I got asked that a million times. It's a dream come true. Years of hard work, years of dedication. So you're repeating yourself a lot. It's annoying, but it's part of the game.
And then we go outside where there's a hound of autograph seekers, including one man in the cold Boston winter that is simply wearing a Ring of Honor hoodie.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yes. With the old logo, too. So wow. An older hoodie. He predicts that he will finish Dennis Siever within 2 minutes. They go through the open workout. Once again, the family pumping those air miles. They are back. They are back for Boston. Uh-huh. Led by Tony McGregor and his wacky white sweater. This sweater, actually, it was like the identical sweater that a personality at the Fight Network once wore on camera, and it was since banned. This is the same sweater. So Tony McGregor delving into the lavish lifestyle as well.
I remember that sweater.
That was not a positive email afterwards. No more sweater ever. And it was not me. We got Mickey Rourke and his face appearing at the weigh-ins. Fans singing in the crowd. Patty Houlihan and Carl Pendred are on the card for this particular one, as I mentioned. Connor makes the weight 145 pounds, where he says that's championship weight. Tell Jose I'm coming. He will never say Jose.
Never, like, forgetting to remind us that what the ultimate goal is here. What's at stake here?
They interview his mother, who talks about this is the most nervous she gets is fight day and just hours before the fight. And then we got highlights of Connor in his locker room watching the earlier fights, Patty Houlihan, who beat Shane Howell by unanimous decision. And then, what editing this was. Carl Pendred defeated Sean Spencer that night by unanimous decision. And to say the editing of this fight was generous would be a gross understatement. This was one of the most controversial decisions in years on a UFC card. Nobody scored this fight for Carl Pendred other than these three judges. Mm. And it was a travesty this man won this fight. You would never have gotten that tone at all
In the back, they congratulate him.
Oh, as soon as the fight ends, they're all, he got that fight. I mean, you must watch this fight and then juxtapose it with the editing of how this fight was put together. Like the term robbery gets used way too often. This was a robbery
of the year.
100%. 100% robbery of the year. So then we go to the main event that night. Dennis Seaver, he was able to take down McGregor on two occasions with a leg sweep, and McGregor was trying to defend the takedown, but that's very notable for this particular fight on Saturday because the wrestling is going to be the focus, especially for Chad Mendes, who he can't be fully prepared for 25 minutes, and I think his wrestling will be a huge key that you'll need to watch in the opening round. Stops Dennis Seaver in the second. He's just lighting him up with strikes.
Well, I thought reach was the other big story here, and how Connor had so much more of it than Dennis Seaver.
Yeah, and but for Chad Mendes, Connor will have an 8-inch reach advantage.
Yeah.
So he's just lighting him up as the first round ends, and then just continues it into the second. The fight ends, and he spots Jose Aldo in the front row, and Connor just charges him like a maniac in front of his girlfriend, and I believe his niece or a cousin, like this little kid who's just frightened by this nutcase running up.
Do they let little kids watch UFC fights?
Yeah.
Live?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, they can cool. They can watch. There's no age restriction.
Right.
Jose Aldo, though, no-sells this as Connor's getting right up in his face, and they cut this awesome commercial where they showed this, and then Jose Aldo just like gives this cut eye to the camera like he is the scariest individual in the world. Mm-hmm. It was an awesome commercial. Anyway, this fight was a huge success. People were questioning, you know, going against the huge NFL game. It's a Sunday night. The card averaged 2.75 million, and then the actual fight with Connor and Seaver did 3.1 million people. It was the highest UFC card they ever did on Fox Sports 1, and this was the definitive, you know, conclusion on Conor McGregor being a massive draw, because you cannot give Dennis Seaver was a warm body in the cage with this guy. It didn't matter who he was with, and it was the highest rated UFC fight on cable since December of 2009. So
wow.
Huge numbers for the UFC back in January on this Fox Sports 1 card in Boston, and that would conclude episode 6 of the Notorious series.
Mm-hmm.
What a primer for UFC 189 this week. I feel
yeah.
We deserve a cut of this pay-per-view for this promotion.
I'd say, I was kind of hungry for more actual build-up to this Chad Mendes fight. And obviously, you know, they're probably shooting that their own and probably going to release something like that another time. But, you know, I'm actually more eager to watch, like, some of the UFC-produced stuff now. You know, watch the Countdown special and see how they kind of explain this whole Aldo Mendes story.
Who's your pick on Saturday, Wei?
Man, it's tough, man. I'm going to say Conor.
I'm going with Conor McGregor as well.
Yeah.
I think his striking is... I think the reach is going to play a big factor, but, I mean, his takedown defense will be tested, and I think, man, if this guy is able to be susceptible to those takedowns, it's going to be... Mendes will be able to grind out, I think, 3 of 5 rounds if that is the case. And Mendes is a tremendous striker as well. I mean, he came in as primarily a wrestler being thrown into mixed martial arts, but his evolution as a striker, I mean, he can stand with Conor McGregor. I feel McGregor, though, is the better striker, but I am picking Conor McGregor this Saturday night. We will now go to the Law Message Board and hear from those of you that watched the Notorious series. What was your overall assessment of the 6-part series?
I thought this was a very well-produced, very nice-looking documentary series. Again, you know, not very heavy on narrative, not very heavy on, you know, too many editing tricks. Just more so of a, you know, just sort of a like I said, like a home video collage of like big moments leading up to these fights. And, you know, doing that, I thought it did a tremendous job of it, of making me feel like I was a part of this guy's entourage throughout his entire year and a half of build up to this Jose Aldo fight. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. I give it, you know, maybe a 8 out of 10.
I went 7. I liked this a lot. I thought it was a nice kind of look behind the scenes. I didn't so much mind that this wasn't the
over-the-top. I thought it was refreshing.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I mean,
it was just a very...
Compared to, like, Total Divas, for instance, you know, which I'm a fan of, but that's for a completely... It's for different production reasons. There are different styles of production. This was a more natural feeling.
Did you watch Total Divas last night?
Oh, I forgot about it.
Is it DVR'd?
You mean Monday or Sunday?
No, Tuesday.
Oh,
the
Tuesday.
New night.
Right, right. Yeah, you're right.
Remember, it was last night.
I did DVR it, so I will watch it on my flight.
Okay. Well, if you get to see episode one, we'll chat about it on Review of Raw next week.
Okay.
I want your thoughts.
Sure.
Okay. We start off with Alan Jones. Hi, folks. I really enjoyed this documentary series. The RTE crew have slick production, and I do love it when they venture into combat sports coverage, similar to the Prince Devitt documentary. But as an Irish MMA fan, I do find McGregor a little much. Although I do find his father entertaining, and you can definitely see where McGregor gets his personality from, I feel Conor in media situations acts quite childish, making foolish remarks which don't do him any favors. Having said all of that, I hope he wins on Saturday. I guess it's just the Irish in me. I think it does him lots of favors,
yeah,
actually.
Because I beg to differ.
Whether you want to get behind this guy to see him fulfill what he says, or you just hate this guy, hoping that his opposition is able to stop him, I think that there's an emotion and an opinion of the guy one way or the other. There's very little indifference towards him, and he's endeared himself to a crowd while still creating a dynamic where there's others that hate him.
And I find him like just a genuinely funny person.
He's quick-witted.
Yeah.
He's fast on his feet.
And that's,
he's tremendous. Like,
I think like that's so rare in general, you know, much less in an athletic environment. Like, we've seen fighters try to be funny, and it is often cringeworthy.
Ben Rothwell.
Or what's his name? Dodson. John Dodson.
Mm-hmm.
Not
well,
funny,
you see,
dude.
Well, that's
but
you see the ripple effect where guys see how this is connecting and working. And it's, okay, well, I'm going to write down some material. And it's the difference between watching Richard Pryor at the prime of his career doing stand-up and a guy say, oh, I can do it. I'll write a 10-minute set.
No, it's not like that. And, you know, but guys like Conor, guys like Chill are naturally funny, quick-witted people. And that's why they're such stars. We go to Aran from Denmark. If Conor loses to Chad in a bad way, what is his way to get the hype back? Is that one of the reasons so many fighters are so quiet, because they are afraid they can't back up what they say? Which next international fighter do you see being a star in their native market? My guess would be Marquan Amerikani being the Conor McGregor of Finland.
Yeah, Marquan Amerikani is... He's got a ton of personality with him. He's someone they're bringing along very slow thus far. He's defeated Andy Ogle and then Maceo Fullen a few weeks back. He certainly has that personality. And if you watch the post-fight from his last fight a couple of weeks ago in Germany, where he's just breaking down, crying, his mother's crying in the audience. I mean, what a – unlike any post-fight interview I've ever seen.
He's not a trash talker, though, it seemed like Chael or Conor. He's just more like – again, he's very funny.
He's really cocky, like extremely cocky if you hear him in interviews. But that's a good thing. I think that's what people really gravitate towards. It's happening now with Joanna Jędrzejczyk, where she's the same. She believes she is the best fighter in the world. And I think people really get off on confidence and seeing these people succeed and back up what they say.
Like, are you know, let's see if you'll look like an idiot for saying these things and, you know, not being able to back it up.
And the last one is Mario from Mexico City. I was fascinated with the structure of the series. Kudos to RTE. Conor McGregor is already a star. If he is as good as he says he is, he will change the game as a mainstream sports star, not only as a MMA fighter. Maybe in a few years we will see him in a role at WrestleMania. I think he could fit in as a special attraction. Who the fuck is Steven Seagal? That made my day. Yeah, that was when he was in the limo talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger and then took the jab at Steven Seagal. Which would be great. Maybe Seagal could come down with Jose Aldo to the cage for their fight.
Awesome.
I mean, that would be – what a collision that would be.
Yeah.
All right. That is going to wrap up another week of Review Away, as Mr. Ting has another flight to catch to Las Vegas. Sorry about the miscommunication there. But it was great to have you here live in studio.
Yeah. It's too bad you won't be there.
I won't be, but I will be back here. Fight Network has coverage all week long that I'll be doing with Robin Black. And you will be there for Saturday's card, but then coming back Sunday, correct?
Yes.
All right. Well, next week on the show, Mr. Ting is going to have the week off because he is not going to have any time this week to go back and watch an event. So next week, I will be joined by the administrative editor of SureDog.com, Jordan Breen, who is the encyclopedia of mixed martial arts knowledge, but also grew up
a huge professional wrestling fan.
I'd say he's the encyclopedia of things in general.
He's very well versed.
He knows a lot of shit about a lot of shit.
So he has selected our review for next week. We are going to be reviewing Clash of the Champions 13, Thanksgiving Thunder. Before we had Thunder, we had Thanksgiving Thunder.
Oh, boy.
Headlined by Ric Flair and Butch Reed, and one of the worst matches in WCW and, quite frankly, wrestling history. It is Sid Vicious and the Night Stalker. Oh. This was Jordan Breen's suggestion of what to review from November of 1990. And we will chat about that event next week, and then Way will be back. He's still going to be doing a review of Raw next week, but then you'll be back on Review Away in 2 weeks.
Yes.
So we are going to have a bit of a bumpy next month because it is about to become G1 season. And by G1 season, I mean a full month. So it's going to be touch and go most weeks. But we will keep providing this show, just in many incarnations.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Way, have a great...
Some musical chairs.
Yes, musical chairs. A proper description of what it will look like. So, thank you for all of you for tuning in this particular week for our look at Conor McGregor getting set for the Chad Mendes fight on Saturday night. And if you are going to be watching the fight, we will have a pre-show at 7 Eastern on Fight Network, and then a post-show immediately after the main event.
Mm-hmm.
And I will actually not be involved in that.
What?
I am not going to be there.
Where are you going?
I have a wedding that I cannot miss. I am one of the groomsmen. So I knew about
what's really important, John?
Way, you have to cherish your friendships out there. That's my lesson for the week. I actually have to give a speech at this wedding.
Really?
Any suggestions?
I don't know. But if you do it, can you Periscope it?
No, I will not Periscope it. But that is a good idea.
Talk about the fight that you're missing.
Maybe I will. Yeah.
No, don't do that. Do not bring up fighting or pro wrestling in any way.
Well, that will be my Saturday night. I will be at a wedding, and Way, you will be at...
You'll be drunk.
You could be at a funeral if those Irish fans don't see Conor McGregor win. Mm. It could be an Irish wake. They're going to be drinking.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, well... It should be a hell of an environment. Are you going to go out and watch the fight in the arena for that one? You should.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, if I'm able to. I'm usually just in the back, so.
All right, maybe. Well, that's one I would want to go watch in the actual arena. Should be a lot of fun. All right, that's all for us, folks. We will be back later this week. All our regular slate of shows. We've got John Morrison on The Lost Sunday night at 11 Eastern. All the usual stuff. LiveAudioWrestling.com, iTunes, Instagram, Twitter, and no Periscope.
The support I'm getting from my home nation is huge. The support I'm getting from all the Irish-American people here is huge. And it's just grown every time. And that's another reason why I really wanted that finish. And I was coming to finish this guy, and I'm coming to finish everyone. I'm overwhelmed with it. You know what I mean? It blows me away. I'm just going to keep doing what I do, keep showing up, and keep being spontaneous. You're not going to know what comes when you're fighting me. You know, I'm going to, like I said, I'll try anything. I'll try absolutely anything. I'll hit him with any part of my frame to try and put him away. And I don't know, people are just latching onto that and just, you know, my go-for-broke attitude.
McGregor received a tremendous reaction in Boston at the TD Garden, but he didn't have strictly tunnel vision on the fight as he was able to soak in the atmosphere in the TD Garden.
It was green. The place was green out there. I walked by a full-blown leprechaun. A full-blown leprechaun was standing right there, the whole kit. And then I'm looking at the thing, and there's a few more. I'm like, there's about 5 or 6 full-blown leprechauns out there. I'm gonna load them up, and we're going to come back here and do an interview with all these leprechauns. But, man, these Boston people and the Irish-Americans, we're one of a kind, you know what I mean? We are a crazy nation. And honestly, go out here and fight for these people. And that's why I'm a bit upset that I really wanted that finish. And fuck it anyway, you know what I mean?
What were your thoughts just this whole week with just all of the added media attention, having your own media day? Did you kind of come into this week expecting all of this, and now at the end of it, just surprised, just all of the focus being allotted to you?
I mean, to be a champion and to reach the high levels, this is what it's about. You can't handle this side of the game, well then, you're mid-tier. You're mid-level. You know what I mean? And I'm not mid-level. I'm top. So give it all to me. Give me all the media. Put all the pressure on me. I don't feel pressure. I'm going to go in and try absolutely anything. Strike him with any blow to put him out. No matter how many people are interviewing me or what's going on, it means nothing to me. I just this is part of the game. To be truly successful, you need to... This is like another art. This is like another discipline. It's like learning how to box. You need to learn how to handle the media pressure. It's another discipline. And it's a discipline that I'm learning each time.